for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Some say it's an assault on religious liberty. Others call it a war on women. The issue of whether women should have easy access to affordable contraceptive services has become the latest sticking point. Religious liberty and women's health. Joining me to talk about the issue and its political implications, Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, Anthony Piccirillo of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Laura Meckler of the Wall Street Journal, and Sarah Brown of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unwanted Pregnancy. I realize that this is a very controversial issue. I'll be interested to hear your comments and questions. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. And good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Diane.
Laura Meckler, let me start with you. Tell us what the White House said yesterday, or, as we know, David Axelrod is a spokesperson for President Obama on this. Tell us what that step was yesterday.
Well, yesterday, David Axelrod, who's a senior advisor, senior strategist for the Obama reelection campaign, said that the White House would be looking for a way to try to satisfy both sides of the issue going forward on this controversial decision to require that almost all employers offer free contraception, and that there was a narrow exception for churches, but not a broader exception for organizations that are affiliated with religious organizations, such as universities or hospitals that have religious ties. Those people objected very strongly to many of them, I should say, objected very strongly to this decision. And so what David Axelrod says, well, we're going to try to, there's a year-long delay in implementing the rule for those groups. So they said, well, we're going to try to find a way to accommodate the concerns. But I think we should also note that the White House was very clear that they were not looking for a rollback. They said that all women who work for these employers would have access to free contraception. So the question that was raised was, is there a way to try to, split the baby somehow, find a way to accommodate the concerns, perhaps by selling it as a rider, as a separate policy that would cover contraception. So those are, it's a little bit complicated, but they're looking for a way out.
Laura Meckler of the Wall Street Journal, turning to you, Anthony Piccirillo. Talk about first, why is so many Roman Catholic institutions objected to the president's ruling, and then your reaction to David Axelrod's comments yesterday.
Sure. Thanks, Diane. Basically, what's happened is the health care reform law provides for preventive services. That includes preventive services for women. The idea is to get out ahead of diseases with prevention, things like mammograms. That was actually what was discussed most prominently in the debate. That's the kind of thing that the Catholic bishops strongly support. The problem here, though, is that within that mandate, there has been included now stuff that doesn't prevent disease, but instead prevents pregnancy or people. And that's given rise to a lot of objection on the policy grounds. But really, the biggest uproar has been over the fact that there is now a legal compulsion for Catholic institutions, not just universities and hospitals, but also charities, those who serve others. And precisely because they serve others, that's why they fall outside the exemption, that they have to provide that kind of coverage to all their employees, even over their religious objection. And that government compulsion is what's giving rise to the religious liberty problem.
And your reaction to David Axelrod's comments?
Well, my reaction is basically, the way to fix the problem is to fix the policy. I mean, there's a lot of talk about trying to work this through and so forth over the 1 year. But if the 1 year is simply, as we've been told, just to provide more time for full compliance with the current policy, then that's not accommodation at all. What we need is a change in the policy. That's the only way we'll get an allayance of the concerns.
Anthony Piccirillo, he's general counsel to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Barry Lynn, what is the history of exempting religious institutions from state and federal laws.
There are an enormous number of exceptions already built in, Diane, into federal law. In just a review a few years ago by the New York Times, they found in the last 15 years prior to the study, there were over 200 exceptions and exemptions placed into federal law that only exempt religious institutions. But unfortunately, 200 is not enough. And now we find very powerful groups, including the Roman Catholic Church, interested in finding more and more excuses, more and more efforts to convince people that corporations have a conscience. To me, the real clash here is between the assertion that there is a corporate conscience on the part of the Roman Catholic Church or some evangelical churches that might run a hospital, and the more important religious liberty interest of the individual conscience of women to make a choice, as they would always have under this plan, to either use insurance coverage for birth control or reject it. That's the conscience that really ought to matter here.
Barry Lynn, he's executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And to you, Sarah Brown, the question becomes, should we be surprised that this issue over birth control measures for young women, older women at religious institutions should become so controversial?
You know, Diane, I've been working in this area since 1968, and I don't recall a time where it has been as contentious as it is now. And so, you know, as one of the older people in the room, I sort of see this over a long period of time, and I'm very puzzled by it. You know, this issue that we're talking about, contraception, birth control, is not a trivial matter. It's an enormously important preventive health service for women. Very recently, the CDC referred to it as one of the 10 greatest public health advances of the last century, on a par with immunizations, sanitation, clean air and water. This is major. And it has ramifications that I think some of us almost forget because it's kind of been on the scene for so long.
Such as?
Well, I mean, among other things, contraception helps to reduce maternal mortality. It improves the lives and health of children because of child spacing. It is a major way to approach endometriosis, uterine fibroids, anemia, bleeding. But more importantly, really, it's allowed all of us, women, to participate fully in education and the U.S. workforce. So anything that threatens women's access to it is a very serious blow.
Sarah Brown, CEO of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unwanted Pregnancy. The question, Laura Meckler, is, does this policy stop at birth control issues?
Well, this policy specifically only regards birth control. If you're referring to the larger debate, obviously there are very contentious debates over abortion.
Of course.
And whenever you're talking about birth control, you're kind of a hop, skip, and a jump away from abortion. And that is extremely controversial. We may get to it later. Another very controversial thing around Planned Parenthood, which kind of brings together birth control, abortion, and women's health.
I want to understand where this ruling stops.
Well, this ruling does not require institutions to pay for abortion services, if that's what you're asking. I mean, there's no mandate for that. So, if there was, I think it would be a lot more controversial than even we see now with contraception.
Anthony Piccarillo.
Well, there are a couple things. There's a factual point here to begin with, which is that this mandate specifically includes sterilization. So it's not just limited to contraception. And on top of that, various of the FDA-approved devices and drugs for contraception include things that have abortifacient qualities, such as the IUD, newly approved drug Ella. But the other thing is this, and this is, I think, perhaps what's behind Diane's point. The principle of religious liberty that's at stake is the same, regardless of whether the controversial issue happens to be abortion, contraception, or whatever it might be. It's Catholics' beliefs today, someone else's beliefs tomorrow. And in fact, abortion, a mandate to cover abortion, is on the docket right now before the Washington State Legislature. It came out basically
but
right around the time this decision.
But it's not part of this particular ruling.
That's correct. But if the principle is established and maintains, then that will be permitted.
Okay.
And again, we already have abortifacient
back
drugs.
To your reference to an IUD, mm-hmm. how is that?
My understanding, and I'm not particularly expert in this area, but my understanding is that an IUD, part of the way it operates is that it tends to prevent implantation. It disrupts the implantation process. And if you understand abortion to occur by disruption of a pregnancy beginning at conception, then it has abortifacient qualities. But again, the broader principle is if it's morally objectionable and you're still forced to subsidize, to sponsor, then the door is open. The legal groundwork is laid for things that perhaps might be a more popular concern
Laura
than contraception.
Neckler.
And I think we're the interesting thing about this debate is that it takes place on two different levels. There's broad support for contraception in this country, even among Catholic women. You know, the vast majority of Catholic women say in surveys that they've used contraception. But there's also an underlying sort of philosophical point, which I think Anthony is getting to, which is sort of the principle. Can government force a religious organization to pay for something that it finds morally objectionable?
Laura Meckler of the Wall Street Journal, we'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk further. Take your calls, your comments. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about the administration's decision on the distribution or access to birth control information to be provided not only by secular institutions, but religious ones as well, excluding churches, but including Roman Catholic colleges, charitable foundations, and so on. Here with me, Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Church and State. Barry Lynn, people who are opposed to this decision are calling it an attack on religious freedom. Help me to understand your view of that.
Yeah, I think this is an enormous stretch of the idea of religious freedom. Religious freedom is, can you wear a yarmulke when you're serving in the Air Force? I mean, we have been on the side of religious freedom and freedom of expression. The problem with the principle that Anthony just talked about, the kind of corporate conscience that allows an employer to make decisions for all the employees, including might be thousands of employees in a big hospital, most of whom have no connection to the Roman Catholic Church. I don't like to speculate about what people might do next. I like to tell people what they've already said they want to do next. David Stevens is the CEO of a group called the Christian Medical Association. He believes that one of the problems with this rule now is that it should be expanded not just to Catholic hospitals or other big institutions, but that individual employers should be allowed to say no coverage of contraceptions for their individual employees. In other words, allowing the employer at the bookbinding store or the grocery store to say, I do not believe in birth control, and I am going to refuse insurance coverage for any of my employees who might want it, because my rights, my claim of religious freedom trumps that of my employees. This is absolutely shocking. We're talking about trumping already, in Anthony's model, the rights of individual women who are parking attendants, cafeteria workers, nurses, or physicians at what is nominally a Catholic hospital, but it serves the whole community. It gets federal funding, lots of it. It provides a public function, but in this case, Anthony says, but they don't have to abide by the law of confirmation of coverage of contraception.
Barry is describing a slippery slope at which we are already apparently at the dread bottom. In other words, all this alleged chaos that he's describing is the situation that currently obtains now, which is where employers are free to negotiate with their insurance companies and get the coverage that they want for their employees and not the coverage that they don't want. There are some state mandates, but those are much more easily avoidable than this kind of more nearly airtight HHS mandate. Freedom runs rampant, and that freedom has allowed not just employers to have freedom, but individual employees, because the result has been that 9 out of 10 employer plans already provide for contraception. So it's widely available in society. It's widely available in health insurance. And what we're dealing with here is not birth control, but control. It's about the government forcing institutions to go that extra mile, the last mile, as it were, between 90% and 100%.
Sarah Brown.
Well, I mean, we've been talking here now about sort of the respective rights of a particular religion and how it should be managed. But I think it's absolutely critical to also talk about the rights of women as distinct from these institutional issues. Remember, it's women who get pregnant, bear children, and often carry most of the responsibility for rearing them. So my view, and I think a lot of other people feel this way, is we need to give as much attention to meeting the needs of women as to meeting the needs of a particular religion. So what that translates into is something like protecting religious doctrine and freedom should be matched by equal and intense attention to protecting the women who may be harmed by religious freedom. And that is a very, very important aspect of this. If these women are denied coverage, they are put out then into the community to find contraceptive services at the same time that the U.S. Congress is entertaining serious proposals to cut back public funding for contraceptive services in the community. These women are not eligible for Medicaid. Remember, they have jobs in these institutions. And so the question is, where are they going to get care? Health departments are already overwhelmed with patients. And we can't just say, well, you can't get it here, but just good luck out there. So whatever the resolution of this is, it has to be focused on individual women in the chaotic U.S. healthcare system.
Laura Meckler.
I just think one thing to keep in mind, though, about what Sarah just said is that under current law, there's no mandate that anybody provide contraceptive services, much less free contraceptive services, and people have found ways to get them. Now, that's not to say there isn't a case to be made for why we should make it easier for people to get them, but the people do find ways right now.
And Laura's absolutely right about that. But if the new law of the land under the Affordable Care Act, and with the advice of the Institute of Medicine, is that contraception is defined as a preventive service and therefore free to women, we will create a new class of women who are being discriminated against if they are not able to access that new provision.
And that's the very effort I want to get at with you, Barry Lynn. How does this current effort compare to other efforts carving out civil liberties in the past?
Well, I think this is an enormous new claim, because this is a claim, of, as I said earlier, of a kind of corporate conscience that trumps all the time, would trump the rights of individual women who work at the hospital. By the way, if you're talking about a big hospital, there's nothing in the regulations that prohibits a Catholic hospital from putting up on the bulletin board, along with the employment discrimination law package from the Department of Labor, a statement that says, although we cover contraceptives in your health care plan, we, the leadership of this hospital, you can say, we and God believe you shouldn't take advantage of them. There's nothing that stops an institution from trying to make that moral case, so-called moral case. But the way Anthony and some of the critics of this policy describe it, it's as if we are having dissolved birth control pills in the water cooler. That is not what this is about. This is about women making an individual choice about this kind of medical intervention in the same way they would choose anything else within the cafeteria of available services, medications, and devices.
Anthony.
What stops the situation that Barry described is right. It's not a law that prevents that. It's their institutional integrity that prevents that. Basically, if that were the rule, then institutions, religious institutions, would be forced to practice other than they preach. They would be forced to be hypocrites and fakers. They could teach one thing, but then they'd be sponsoring and paying exactly the opposite, which destroys their credibility on the question, and that's part of the First Amendment interest that's at issue here. The other thing that Barry mentioned several times, and I want to come back to it, he's made reference derisively, I think, to what he refers to some sort of institutional conscience. But, of course, the Supreme Court has recently recognized by a 9-0 vote that religious organizations deserve, quote-unquote, special solicitude under the religion clauses of the First Amendment precisely because of these questions of institutional integrity. If religious institutions can't control how it is that they manage themselves, including things like employer policy such as this, then basically, and if in turn the government can control it, then whoever picks the messenger picks the message. And over time, that erodes the message and undermines the independence of those institutions from the state.
Well, that case really.
Here's an email from Chris, who says, I recall hearing on your program during the healthcare debate, Julie Robner saying insurance companies want to cover contraceptives and abortions because they are less expensive than pregnancy. Is there any lobbying going on about this? Secondly, do any of your guests know if religious organizations cover erectile dysfunction drugs? If they cover that, they really need to cover contraceptives. Anthony?
I'm not aware about the precise policies. Those vary from place to place.
You don't know, is
yeah,
that
I mean,
what you're
they,
saying?
They may or may not. You know, the question here, I think, is about you know, get the freedom of those institutions to do things that are not inconsistent with their religious beliefs. There may be some that object to providing that as a matter of their religious commitments, and they should be free to exclude those things just as well. And it's just, again, it's the same principle applied in a different context.
There.
See, that's exactly what I'm worried about, the same principle applied in a different context. If a Catholic hospital, for example, let's stop at the beginning of life, let's turn to the end of life. If a Catholic hospital, based on an interpretation of Catholic doctrine, I realize there are different interpretations, says, you know, we don't care if somebody signs a do not resuscitate order, we're not going to abide by the patient's wishes. We're going to do every single thing possible after that heart attack to bring that patient back. If any decisions made in a living will run counter, for example, to Catholic doctrine, under Anthony's theory, the hospital or the insurance company would be able to say, well, you know, we're not going to allow that decision to be made. And I think that puts patients last, corporate interests first, and that's the wrong balance of equities in a case like this.
Laura.
Well, there's a lot in what Barry just said there. I'm not sure if he was saying that.
Focus on the birth control issue.
Okay. Well, let's go back to what the questioner asked about insurance companies. And it is true that you can buy a lot of birth control pills for the cost of one childbirth. And insurance companies do have an interest in this. However, it should be noted that they could have been offering them for free all along, and they have been charging copays, you know, for many, many years. So, but yes, I haven't heard of any specific lobbying around from insurance companies around this particular rule. But it is true that, and in Hawaii, that's one of the ways they get around this particular dilemma, is that the insurance companies are essentially willing to offer this coverage for free so that the religious institutions are not really paying for anything.
I see. Go ahead, Sarah.
You, Diane, earlier you raised the issue of sort of how does abortion play into all of this. And my own view is that this really all is all an argument about abortion. Anthony spoke earlier, for example, about some theories about how certain contraceptive methods work, which incidentally is not supported by developmental biologists or the Institute of Medicine or most medical experts. But I think the core concept is this. If we all are so upset about abortion, as I believe this conversation is all about, one of the few ways we know about how to reduce abortion is through the widespread use of contraception. And so I ask people always, you may be uncomfortable about contraception, but aren't you more uncomfortable about abortion in this country? This is the way forward. Prevention is through contraception, not through these endless arguments about control and religious doctrine and so forth. And there's international experience as well as domestic experience that backs that up.
How politically dangerous is this issue for President Obama, Laura Meckler?
You know, I think it's a little more dangerous than they expected it to be. They knew that this would be controversial, but this has really become certainly an uproar over the last several days. And that's why we see comments like David Axelrod's trying to say that we're looking for a way to work this out, whether, you know, whether what that results in or not. In the end, we'll see. But, you know, Catholic voters marginally by a small margin supported President Obama in the last election. There tend to be a swing vote. But I think beyond the impact of any individual Catholic voters is sort of the fact that this is dominating the debate and it's giving an opening for Republicans. Mitt Romney said that President Obama was conducting an assault on religious liberty. And, you know, it's just a distraction.
Laura Meckler, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have many callers. Let's open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for letting me call in. I have a question, or a comment, rather, that there's many religious beliefs in the country that are going to limit the healthcare choices that individuals make. For example, Jehovah's Witnesses might refuse blood transfusions. And when it comes to end-of-life care, there's tremendous variation in individuals' consciences in terms of what decisions they're going to make. And it's very interesting to me that in none of those other situations are we proposing that your employer has a right to micromanage your health care according to their religious beliefs. It's only when you're dealing with a part of the body that belongs exclusively to women that there's even a controversy that your employer should be able to make those decisions for you.
What do you say to that, Anthony?
Yeah, well, that's actually not an accurate statement of what's in the health care reform law. That law includes accommodations for Christian Scientists, for people who have beliefs about spiritual healing. There are different sorts of accommodations, just not here, and just not with respect to an area where freedom has resulted in the allocation that people want. Employers who want to provide this, provide it. Employees who want to work for employers who provide it, go and work for those employers. If they would rather work for the employer that doesn't want to do it and buy it on their own, they can do that too. That's how freedom works, and everybody wins
at
there. It maximizes freedom.
At the same time, I wonder how many people read the fine print mm-hmm. when they take on a job that they mm-hmm. may desperately need to have. For mm-hmm. example, at a Catholic hospital, mm-hmm. a janitor, someone who cleans the toilet, someone who works perhaps even in the operating room who may not be Roman Catholic, but who desperately needs that job.
Yeah. Well, Diane, generally the print is not that fine in the sense that there's a big crucifix hanging over the door, and it's a Catholic institution, and many people know what the Catholic Church stands for on these issues. And so it's what we lawyers might call coming to the nuisance. Another example might
so
be...
So you're saying they just shouldn't take the job
well,
because they should know.
They have 90% of employers out there that are offering this in their coverage. They also have salaries that they can use to buy what is widely available and cheaply available contraception. And so that's one scenario, and compare that to the scenario where you have the federal government coming in and telling religious institutions that they must sponsor and subsidize something that violates their religious beliefs. And you compare those two scenarios.
Well, I think Anthony is focusing on the rights of the Catholic institution to structure its health insurance plans as it wishes. But what's left out of this is what do we do for the women who then are thrown out of the system when they seek contraception? It is not cheap. The average cost to women is about $600 a year, and for the better methods, it could be even more than that. The question is, are we going to give equal attention to making these women whole? And we can't do it in a way that's bureaucratic and separate pieces of paper and different requirements. It has to be seamless and smooth.
Sarah Brown, she's CEO of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unwanted Pregnancy. Short break. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. By Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. And by The Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR.
As the U.S. struggles with problems at home and abroad, Latin America is booming. Why U.S. influence in the region is waning, and what we can learn from our southern neighbors. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back. Lest we forget, the Susan G. Komen Foundation seemed to be part of this whole controversy when it announced, Laura Meckler, that it would no longer be providing grants to Planned Parenthood. What happened there? And now the reversal, the resignation of the vice president.
Right. This is sort of a parallel controversy that was happening at the same time. There's been, in recent years, a lot of controversy around Planned Parenthood because in addition to the contraception they offer and the cancer screenings that they offer, they also offer abortion services. So there, in the anti-abortion movement, there's a big movement against Planned Parenthood, including an attempt at a congressional investigation. The Susan G. Komen Foundation, which of course is the leading fighter against breast cancer, made a very controversial decision to cut off grants for breast cancer screenings to Planned Parenthood. They also, maybe perhaps like the White House, underestimated the response to that, which was tremendous. There was a huge backlash to that among many supporters of the Komen Foundation who had no idea that they would take a position like that and viewed it as highly political. They, as you said, the Komen Foundation reversed course after a few days, and the vice president, who is the one who helped promote this decision in the first place and has been on record as against Planned Parenthood and anti-abortion movement, resigned yesterday.
Anthony, I'd be interested in your reaction to that whole squabble.
Sure. Well, it's a little bit outside our bailiwick, but one of the things that's interesting is how it contrasts with the other debate, because what you're dealing with is, instead of a church-state conflict, you're dealing with a private actor conflict. And so that doesn't implicate religious liberty issues. One of the other things that it's made me think about is you were talking about some of the politics associated with the decision on the HHS mandate. And I can tell you that for my part, I've been just sort of puzzled at what the political calculus was. And maybe the backlash associated with the Komen decision helps to illustrate that, in the sense that perhaps the White House was fearing that same kind of intimidation, where you have this massive, massive effort against Komen based on what was something in the high hundreds of thousands of its total grants to Planned Parenthood. There was just an extremely strong reaction against Komen, and perhaps the White House is fearing the same thing if it were
But isn't that interesting that Planned Parenthood, which provides abortions as a very small portion of its activity, I gather it's no more than, what, 3-4%, Laura?
Yes, that's what Planned Parenthood says, 3% of their services are abortion.
That huge uproar over Komen no longer providing that money to Planned Parenthood would get such a huge backlash.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the percentages are in relation to the overall Planned Parenthood budget.
But that's what they say.
Right. But the basically, they are the largest provider of abortions in the country, and you have a situation where Komen is doing breast cancer research, an uncontroversial thing, and you have, on the other hand, Planned Parenthood, which is doing many controversial things. And I think it was the intersection of those things, or the attempt by Komen to sort of sever that and keep themselves into purely non-controversial grounds that got them
Barry.
In.
Yeah, no, I think what does Komen and Planned Parenthood issue demonstrates is that a lot of people, a lot of men and women, said, wait a minute, if you set up a comprehensive health care system, and in this case we're talking in the HHS rule about a comprehensive health insurance system for women, then it has to be comprehensive. You can't have people opting out of this procedure, that device, this prescription drug for essentially religious reasons.
All right, here's a tweet. It says, here's the solution. Let the institutions do what they want, but eliminate their tax-exempt status. How would you feel about that, Barry Lane?
Well, the problem is, in a lot of places, communities don't have public hospitals that meet all the needs of men or women in those communities. This has just happened in Louisville, Kentucky, for example. Then the tendency is to try to merge with a big Catholic hospital. Again, something that was just stopped in Louisville, Kentucky, at least temporarily. But people don't have the choice to just work anywhere. If you look at the so-called fine print, as in classified ad fine print, in a lot of communities, these somewhat religious or religiously affiliated employers are the biggest dogs in town. If you want a job, that's where you have to go, whether you're Catholic or Methodist or a non-believer.
All right, to Palm Beach, Florida. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane, and thank you for the opportunity. My concern is that I believe the polling says that Catholic women, by and large, want contraception and want it to be available. I don't like the idea that the men of the Catholic Church, namely the bishops, are dictating to women how they should live their lives, particularly when the Catholic bishops' history over the last decade has been less than favorable. They're the ones that are, I think, pushing this harder than anyone else, yet they're the ones that turn their backs or close their eyes to the pedophilia problems within the church. I think Catholic women have a right to of choice, and they should be allowed to have it so long as that is what they want. Men should not be dictating to women how to live their lives.
Anthony.
Yeah, basically, the only dictating that's going on here is by the government. No one is forcing anyone to work with a Catholic employer. No one is taking away the freedom that exists to go out and obtain contraception, which is widely available and indeed in many forms cheaply available. Every once in a while it seems that when folks don't like the position the church takes, they just sort of raise the sex abuse scandal. And it's unfortunate when that happens. It has nothing to do with what's going on here. What we're dealing here with is a situation involving the government compelling religious institutions to do something over against their conscience. Like I said, those are the only people who are being forced.
Sarah Brown.
Well, just back for a minute to the Susan Komen issue that we were discussing earlier. You know, this is partly about abortions we've been talking about, but please remember that when the Affordable Care Act was being debated on the Hill, people were afraid to even put in the words contraception or family planning. We have gotten to a place in this country where this fundamental service that has changed the lives of women and men and children around the world has become controversial for reasons that really don't go to the core of the benefit. And with regard to the caller's point, I don't go through life thinking about sort of as sort of an angry feminist and their men doing battle to women. But I have heard so much in the last several months about how many of the principal people taking positions against Planned Parenthood, against contraception, against mammogram, whatever, are men. How many leading women have been taking these positions against contraception?
And here's an email from Nicole. What's next? Will Catholic hospitals limit health care to homosexual employees because they do not agree with homosexuality?
Oh, gosh, the answer is no. Basically, the church serves everyone based on need, not creed. They provide health insurance to their employees across the board in a manner that's consistent with their principles. The church is strongly opposed to unjust discrimination against people who have a same-sex inclination. That's not a part of this debate, and it's not something that the church is inclined to do in the first place.
But hasn't the church called homosexuality sinful?
It has called homosexual conduct sinful, but that doesn't mean that the church would not basically treat those folks equally in providing benefits that it generally provides to its employees and so forth. There are separate questions that arise when you're asking the church to affirm, either through its benefits or whatever, certain particular conduct. But if you're talking about persons and their own inclinations, everyone is treated equally.
Barry.
Not quite, because I believe the bishops, along with a number of other Protestant, right-of-center religious groups, supported a bill passed by the House, probably, in my judgment, thankfully not to be passed by the Senate, that says in an emergency care situation, if a woman comes into a hospital emergency room and the institution, not the individual doctor, but the institution says, you know, we're against abortion, and if we take certain steps, we will take this pregnant woman now in our emergency room and cause an abortion of this fetus, that hospital, if this bill were to be passed, the hospital would be able to say, I'm sorry, we simply won't help you. That's something John Boehner supported. The House passed it. And I believe the Catholic bishops have no problem with that at all. Talk about treating everybody equally. We're talking about treating women in an emergency situation not equally.
Right.
That's what troubles me.
That's false.
Metropolis, Illinois. Good morning, Craig. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you, Diane. The church does not treat men and women equally, and I'm an example of that. I received a vasectomy at a Catholic hospital. Vasectomies are birth control. Why is it wrong to provide contraceptive services for men but not women?
Yeah, the ethical and religious directives that govern Catholic hospitals basically forbid the hospitals from providing sterilizations, and that includes vasectomies. And so if he received it at a Catholic hospital, he shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. So vasectomies are also...
Yeah, it's not, it's not relevant to gender. It's relevant to the question of whether the church is going to be made complicit in somebody doing permanent damage to their reproductive system, and
Sarah.
The church won't.
But again, this falls most heavily on women because the vast majority of contraceptive methods are for women. I mean, maybe 20 years from now, there'll be an equal number for men and women. And I suspect then this conversation would go differently, given the prevalence of male leadership in the opposition.
All right. To Tallahassee, Florida. Good morning, Martha.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to bring up a point that I agree wholeheartedly with the point made earlier that this is a debate really about abortion, cloaked in a debate about contraception. But it's important to view the medicine used in birth control pills. It's not only for birth control. In fact, in the developmentally disabled community, I have a developmentally disabled daughter. When our daughters start reaching puberty, we start having to make some very hard decisions about whether we're going to suppress through, contraceptives, their monthly cycle. A great many parents opt to give these kids, emerging teens, hysterectomies, which I think is inappropriate. And I've also been counseled by a doctor to have my daughter undergo a sterilization treatment. He, incidentally, is a Catholic. I don't know if that makes any difference. But wow. So, I feel like this is a little bigger than just the rights. I mean, it's just a little bigger than women. It's a little bit bigger than abortion. It's all about access to quality medical care that's appropriate for the situation.
And, we've even heard case reports of employees in Catholic institutions, in this case, I'm thinking in a hospital, where they were put in the position of having to lie about their condition in order to obtain payment for needed services. To say it was a medical, or in the case of this wonderful caller, a developmental disabled issue in order to get the care needed because it was not affordable outside of the health insurance system.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Blair.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Surely.
I just wanted to bring up a comment, especially relevant with your last caller. From what I understand, and I'm not Catholic, so maybe this is incorrect, but from what I understand from my Catholic friends is that the problem with birth control is not that it's a form of abortion, but that sex should be saved for procreation purposes, and that that's where the main issue arises from, not from abortion. Secondly, though, I wanted to make the comment that I fully support birth control. I think women should be more than welcome to take it, but I think it's kind of an infringement on freedom of religion to dictate what the Catholic Church can do, considering people they can choose where they work. They don't have to work for a Catholic institution, and, if it's a big enough problem and nobody works for them, they would have to change their policies, but if they choose not to change their policy, I think it's their religious right not to have to.
Barry Lynn.
Yeah, I understand the claim, and it's the claim that Anthony is making about this and other matters. But I do think, frankly, that you have to look at the conscientious decisions, the religious liberty interests of the women who are working for these big institutions in particular. Remember, this is already, Blair, this is already a compromise. This is a compromise that says churches, similarly situated religious institutions, do not have to cover these in their insurance plans. That was the compromise. But to say that this needs to go out to all these other institutions that serve the community and get your tax dollars and mine, as well as tax dollars from other Roman Catholics who may be opposed to contraception, I think gives a much greater weight than is necessary under the Constitution or wise under any public policy to the institutional conscience over the woman's conscience.
We talked earlier about Susan B. Komen and the Planned Parenthood effort. Do you believe, Laura Meckler or Sarah Brown, that there is an effort underway to completely defund Planned Parenthood? Laura.
Yes, there's definitely an effort underway. I don't know about completely defund. I think everybody would support individuals making private contributions to Planned Parenthood, but there's certainly an effort to defund public support for Planned Parenthood and evidently institutional, private institutional, like the Komen Foundation. So there has been, I've definitely noticed, having paying attention to these issues for a while now, over the last few years, an increased attack on Planned Parenthood. The reasoning being because of their there are other complaints that they have, but the upshot is it's because they don't like the fact that Planned Parenthood provides so many abortions.
Sarah.
Well, I think Laura's absolutely right, but I also think there's increasing discomfort with public support of contraception in some instances, which is the point I've been making really this whole hour. This is a larger conversation about the presence of modern contraception in American life. And if we are going to work very hard to protect religious liberties and so forth, we have to work equally hard to the women who are harmed by those liberties.
Constitutional liberties versus religious liberties,
yeah, well, Barry. It's interesting. There are two states, California and New York, that have provisions very similar to the HHS rule. They've both been upheld as constitutional against the very attacks that Anthony's made today.
Anthony, last word.
Yeah, basically those exemptions can be gotten around much more easily. The mandates are much broader. The HHS mandate is watertight. This one isn't, so it's more vulnerable to constitutional challenge.
Anthony Piccirillo of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. He's also the author of Piety and Politics. Laura Meckler of the Wall Street Journal, Sarah Brown of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unwanted Pregnancy. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from